General Motors on safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. General Motors on safari. The bush is no place for a woman. If I've heard that once, I've heard it 100 times from hunters, rangers, farmers, naturalists, men who spend their lives often in complete seclusion for half the year or more. John Faraday, the Rhodesian hunter, believed it. He still does. We had a fine old argument last time we met. John's given it all up now. Hunting, I mean. He's given marriage a miss, too. Now, I'm a bachelor myself. And I'm always interested in the other man's reasons for shutting the fairer sex out of their lives. Or at least their reasons for not blessing a member of that sex with a golden ring of bondage. Women should be kept away from the bush by force if necessary. It's the only place left a man can go to get away from them. That's what Faraday said. There have been some splendid women on this continent, I said. Women who've treated the wild places not with awe, but with decent respect. And have won through and made their names legends. I quoted a few of them. Miss Ruth Herditch, who married the Reverend Fisher in Kenya's early days. She was a Victorian lady who, dressed in the costume of the times, rode a bicycle through 800 miles of jungle, desert, and mountain passes. I mentioned Mary McQueen and Mrs. R.O. Preston, wife of the man who worked on the lunatic line in Uganda at the time of the man-eaters who preyed upon the Indian laborers and ate them by the dozen. I dragged every impressive lady's name out of the hat, but it did no good. Bush brings out the worst in women, said Faraday. Oh, they're brave enough, most of them, braver than men. But there's an evil lurking in a woman that's got a good chance of lying dormant for always, unless she trespasses into the veldt. I asked him to explain, and he told me tonight's story, one I have called Exposure. Faraday was leading a safari through the wild parts of northern Rhodesia at the time. His clients were Horace and Frances Langford. The lady's quest in life? To shoot an elephant before her husband. Now, that in itself doesn't make Frances Langford a monster. She was incredibly beautiful, and the rough khaki of those Rhodesian days enhanced her charms instead of hiding them.
He was mine.
The conversation around the fire that night was typical of that safari. Here was the kind of woman a white hunter fears more than a wounded buffalo.
You were standing right in front of me, that's why.
But Horace, darling, you're so slow. You're too slow to catch a cold.
Look, one of you must stand back for the other. You're both good shots. You've fooled that on other game, but neither of you will get a good tusker if you go on like this.
See, Horace, our white hunter's tiring of us. Perhaps
I'm not tiring of you. I don't enjoy family squabbles, that's all. You won't stay in Camp Francis to give Horace a chance.
There you are.
You won't remain in the rear while she has a crack, Horace. After hours of following the spoor, hours in the sun, both of you push past me when I find you a good bull, and the result's always the same. No elephant, more time wasted. This safari is not exactly costing you peanuts. You're wasting money and time.
You are tiring of us, Mr. Faraday, aren't you?
I'm getting fed up with the way you're behaving, yes. I could quote you a dozen hunters who would have called the whole thing off by now.
Let's call the whole thing off.
I'm turning in now, people. You better do the same. Look, if you want a good elephant, we'd better move from here anyway. The poachers have been too ruddy busy. They've hammered all the big jumbo this side of the river.
It's been so wonderful here. The most heavenly camp we've ever had. The view from my tent
is Faraday says we move, the then we move from.
The sun rises here is something we never see at home.
No, how should you know? You never had a bed to see the sun rises when we're at home.
Well, what I feel is this. This trip's costing your package, right? Well, if you're set on taking a trophy out of Rhodesia, we'd better try and contact the Mweru herd before the rain set in. The big fellows move off in the Impala across the hills as soon as it gets too wet here.
Move camp whenever you wish, John. And listen here, your ladyship. I am going to hammer the first tusker our white hunter finds for us.
Oh, please wait.
And Francis Langford stretched her long, shapely legs and lay back on the canvas camp chair, fingering her dark hair with the right hand, looking at Faraday. Her husband seemed more interested in the whiskey he was drinking too much of than his wife. Turn the head of any man in the world, the hunter thought, and then checked sharply his thinking.
Well, I'm off to bed. Well, let's move tomorrow then.
Right, agreed.
Change might break our luck.
Night, John. Night, darling.
What are you thinking about, John?
Tomorrow, hunt.
What are you thinking about? The lover's question to cover a pause.
That all?
Yes, that's all at the moment.
And the white hunter began in his mind to count the days remaining of the safari. Women in the bush, always so predictable.
You never look at me when we're out together. Don't you like me?
I like you.
Kill it now, Faraday thought.
I'm a hunter. You're a clown. You're married to Horace Langford. As far as I'm concerned, you're royal game. Okay? Well,
do you think I care one scrap of that bald-headed, pot-belly, the whiskey soap?
How should I know? Not really my concern, is it? I've brought you out here to shoot anything. Whether you do or not is still up to you and him.
If we find a bull tomorrow, do I still get first shot?
Persuade Horace to stay in camp tomorrow and you shoot your elephant. Or let him have first shot, and I'll find something for you another day.
No, the first one must be nice.
Well, I've done my best to keep the peace. And I'll tell you one thing. One more muck-up and it's all off. All right?
Well, why haven't you called it off already? We've had several muck-ups so far.
Shall I tell you why? If I called off every safari where members of that safari became petulant, spoilt, like you and your husband, I'd never take out any safaris.
And also it's your living. And you need the money. Sorry, but unforgivable.
Unforgivable, but true, Mrs. Langford. We'll see what tomorrow brings. But my promise stands. Sort things out for yourselves by tomorrow, or it's off. Good night.
Sleep to my tent, please, will you? I'm...
afraid of snakes?
Afraid of snakes.
Hold and be wrapped to nature. And what you see there has been seen a million times before. Women never surprise you, thought Faraday. More unsettled than most, this one, thought the hunter. Did she need to walk so close to him on the journey to the tent?
That you, Francis? Go to bed, it's late. You won't be fit for anything in the morning.
Go to sleep, your ugly self.
Like a kindergarten school teacher. Women in the bush. Women everywhere. Predictable. Always so darn predictable.
But before the safari was over, John Faraday was going to learn that women are never predictable. The new campsite was placed on a plateau, affording them a wonderful sight of the lower reaches of the wide Kalangwezi River, the first morning. When the cook boy brought John Faraday's coffee at 5:30, The hunter had no idea that that day he was going to decide something forever about women. Unfair, really. Faraday just got a bad one. This is how it started.
You get to take your Jeffrey 500 today. If you are, can I use your 375?
Yes, you can. Just make sure the magazine's fully charged. You might need the extra rounds when John finds us that special bull.
Well, let me clean it for you first. The Holland & Holland's a darn fine rifle. You can face up to anything with it.
Thanks. I really prefer my own 350. But it might be a bit too light for that bull.
Faraday carried his Rigby 416, and the others gave their spare weapons to Skaka, the old Chiengi gun bearer. And the first day's hunt began. The people John usually took on safari always brought too many rifles with them. They never had the right one in their hands at the crucial moment. As they made their way to the Kalangweshi, the man of the bush, the leader who didn't perhaps hold complete command of his party, was already thinking that his days as a hunter were numbered. Whatever happened, Faraday wanted to quit whilst he still loved the life. Expedition Prize Bull. The contenders for the honor of killing it, a man and his wife, Francis and Horace Langford, who were not the nicest people to go into the bush with.
Doesn't that old man feel the morning wind? He's got practically nothing on.
Skarker's the finest tracker I've ever known. Hard as nails. He doesn't wear much in case he gets caught up in the storm.
Three hours, and Skaka did not lead them by error. He found what the Langfords sought. Skaka found the father of all the jumbo. 150 yards. Tusks beautiful, long, gleaming, and heavy. The wind was right. The bull was feeding on mapunda berries. He didn't know that he was being watched. Faraday had left his clients in thorn tree shade and had gone forward with the tracker Skaka. Faraday suddenly felt sad.
Why didn't they come out with cameras?
This hunter's hunting days were over, and he knew it.
Get it over with.
He returned to the Langfords.
Under those mapunda trees. He's big. On his own. I'll take it in. You'll wait for my signal before you move. Keep us safe. He catches on. Fire together if you like. But I want no quarreling. This is a hunting expedition.
Yes, yes. Mr. White Hunter. Horace?
The three went forward slowly. And they reached the tracker who crouched in thorn shadow. They cautiously advanced. Faraday turned slightly left, approaching the bull from a direction where his clients might secure a clear shot, or shots. And then Skaka touched the hunter on the leg and pointed to the right.
Blast!
The bull wasn't alone. Another elephant was slowly approaching his companion under the mapunda. Francis Langford spotted the second elephant, but her husband had not taken his eyes off the first. Horace was not interested in the second animal. He wanted the first, the special bull Faraday had found for them. Frances watched her bald-headed husband. She, too, wanted the special bull. She lowered a safety catch. Faraday put out a hand to check the woman, but she was oblivious to his cold fingers as they tightened upon her wrist. She had waited too long, too long. She aimed and fired simultaneously. Mr. Langford, startled by the sudden report of his wife's gun, fired both barrels of his 500.
He's mine. Leave him be.
The woman shot and wounded the bull. The man's went wide. And while the woman struggled to finish off the first bull, the second came screaming for them. The great trunk fell for the enemy as Faraday swung round fast. The first bull. Faraday swung back like a camera's picture frozen in the lens was this. Everything stopped still, action suspended, for a few brief seconds that were like hours. Horace was some 20 paces ahead of his wife. The man was panic-stricken. He was frantically searching the voluminous pockets of his bush jacket for cartridges. His rifle, empty and useless, was held in one hand, his left. It was pointing like a schoolboy's wooden cowboy and Indian weapon at the second elephant. When this picture froze in icy relief before the eyes of the hunter, a perfect exposure, it was not the nearness of death that shocked Faraday. It was the sight of the woman standing 6 paces away from her husband, a loaded rifle leveled not at the bull, but at Horace's back. Faraday leapt towards the woman, knocking the rifle from her hands. The bullet meant for her husband tore into the ground. She stopped to retrieve the hollet. Faraday's boot stepped down on her arm. And at the same time, the hunter fired. Twice. At the enraged bull with the ghastly head wound. And the beast fell. Only Skarka, who stood behind a tree and watched the unrehearsed drama, saw the whole thing in perspective. Faraday unloaded the rifle and handed it to Francis, and then walked to where Horace stood, stock still, staring with unseeing eyes into the middle distance.
Have some too, Francis.
How's your hand?
Doesn't hurt now. Can I have a match? Why did you stop me? Are you going to tell him the truth?
We go back to the railhead in the morning.
You must agree it was my elephant.
You drew first blood. It's your elephant. Horace can have the tusks of the one I shot.
And then Horace came to the campfire. He'd been drinking. He wasn't sure still what the day's events meant. He had not seen his wife's attempt to kill him. Faraday was sure of that.
What happened to my spare ammo, John?
It was in your pocket the whole time, though, son.
I didn't kill the big bull, did I?
No.
Skarka had been left behind at the scene of the shooting to supervise the removal of the tusks. He arrived back in the camp late that evening. Skarka was puzzled. He couldn't understand the behavior of the white people. He was mostly puzzled by the white woman. His Bwana took strange people out into the Bundu. But then he, Skarka, was paid to find animals, look for the spoor, test the wind. These things were his business.
Does Francis know we're leaving?
Yes.
Where is she?
I don't know. Washing, changing? I don't know. Well, I'm turning in early, Horace.
We've got a lot to do in the morning.
John, why are you running out on us tonight of all nights?
Back to the predictable. The woman came towards the fire like something from out of a Parisian salon. She had bathed, and changed. She might have looked ridiculous, dressed in the soft flowing garments she had chosen, except that her extraordinary beauty forbade such an interpretation of her appearance.
I was hoping you'd keep us company round the last campfire. If we're really leaving tomorrow.
Yes, we're leaving. Good night.
And the hunter left the fire and went into his tent. Faraday was quite unprepared for what happened next.
Can I come in? He's drunk.
Is he?
Can't you overlook what happened out there? I didn't know what I was doing. I'm so unhappy.
You tried to murder your husband. If you had, you'd have landed in the death cell. I wouldn't have shielded you. Skarker would have testified against you. However, look, you better go to your tent. We're making an early start in the morning.
I love you. I love you. It would have been for you. A woman's love makes her do strange things. Sometimes terrible things. John, I can make it up to you. You'll soon forget. It was just a silly, terrible thing that happened once. Never again. Look, I'm getting rich, John. Oh, please, forget. Forgive me.
Get back to your tent before I clout you. Go on, get out. And remember, if any accident should happen to Horace before he reaches home safely, I'll find you wherever you are. And I shall tell the authorities about today. Now, get out.
And then the hunter found himself looking into the barrel of a small automatic.
I could kill you for that.
And the bullet tore into the soft bush floor.
I'll keep this. Now, get out.
As the woman stepped from Faraday's tent, a skinny figure moved swiftly towards her, his shadow like a giant's in the firelight. An arm was flung high, a knife flashed for an instant in the moon firelight.
No, Skarker, no!
And Skarker stopped in his tracks.
No, ma'am. No, we don't do things that way. Give me the knife, Skarker. Go back to your fire. The donor will go back to her tent now. And we break camp at first light.
And the old man passed the knife to Faraday and left without a word. The woman looked once at the hunter and walked away. Faraday did not sleep that night. He squatted by the fire, listening to the drunken snores of Horace Langford, who was incapable of finding his tent, and watching the moon above the camp, and eventually the sky lightening, signifying the last morning of his last safari. Faraday's story. Men he understood. Wild beasts he could hunt, admire, and respect. But wild women frighten him. He runs a bookshop now in London's Charing Cross Road, of all places.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.